She first came to public notice when her name was blazoned across the front pages of the Sunday newspapers as the man who had had the effrontery to undergo an operation and become a woman. Well, she's here to tell us where she stands tonight, ladies and gentlemen, Miss April Ashley.
April was a woman. You know what I mean? It wasn't drag, it was, April was female. To be a sort of proud trans person or whatever, to be proud and other, it takes audacity.
Are you still an object of curiosity in England?
Oh, I think so. Why do you think they're all staring so intently?
Well, a lot of them may be surprised that you are so beautiful to look at.
I think if I went home to bed with a few of these people and stripped off, they'd be quite amazed. Because there's certainly nothing male about my body.
Really?
April, who's white and wearing a large furry hat, being photographed by paparazzi.
She's a self-made woman in the most literal sense.
She knew what she wanted and she moulded herself into this character.
She presented herself as untouchable, always perfect, perfectly groomed, perfectly poised.
April showed the world that trans people can be beautiful.
I was Vogue's favourite underwear model.
Vogue's favourite underwear model, were you?
The idea that she might be trans never entered anybody's head.
She was seen as a kind of temptress that would tempt ordinary, decent men into heaven knows what.
She was terrifically famous and then notorious.
Heart attacks, drug addiction, depression, you name it, she's been through it.
April was a pioneer. You know, April kind of put her head on the chopping block.
She risked her life. This could all come crumbling down if anyone was to ever find out.
She took such a huge gamble. Nothing would stop her.
The Extraordinary Life of April Ashley. Hashtag April Ashley.
I was brought up strictly as a boy, and so therefore there was an enormous battle the whole time going on inside that I knew I was growing up to be one thing and yet I was supposed to be another. I mean, if you had an enormous wart on your nose and it was blinding you, you would want it off, wouldn't you? Well, I was a woman and I wanted what was necessary to be removed.
She was regal. She was queenly. April would come to my place for supper sometimes with my husband Sebastian. Parties, if I gave parties, she loved a party, you know.
Simon Callow, friend. April wearing a black gown.
It's almost like meeting a character from a novel, actually. This extraordinary, charismatic, compelling and physically powerful figure with exquisite manners and diction. But behind that magnificent exterior, there was a scouse fighter. If somebody crossed her or didn't take her seriously, she could slap them down fiercely in vivid, not altogether drawing room language.
Paul O'Grady, friend.
The very first time I met April Ashley, I was so excited to see her. And we started to talk about Liverpool. Because a lot of trans people don't refer to the past. They call it the dead name, you know, for when they were a boy or for when they were a girl. Not April. Oh, she said, I was born in Pitt Street. And you look at this lady of the manor, you know, she'll be on the cover of Horse and Hound or whatever, and she's like the epitome of elegance. And here she is, George from Pitt Street, and she's talking about it.
I was brought up in Liverpool in a very tough area. I had three brothers and an adopted brother and two sisters, and they were all terribly ashamed of me. You know, I was called Pansy, Sissy, you name it. So needless to say, my brothers and sisters never wanted to be seen with me. And my mother just couldn't bear me because I was an embarrassment.
She's quite a delicate little thing. And you think, God, how did she cope? You know, she was constantly bullied. She was not only bullied at school, she was bullied at home. She had a dreadful mother. I had no respect for her. I'd slap her about at the drop of a hat. I mean, shocking, really. I imagine young George going into his mother and saying, I want to be a girl. Imagine what would have happened. He'd have been beaten black and blue.
So there wasn't a day that you went through a nice day where you sort of felt good. You know, you were made aware of it every single day of your life. But I think that gave me the strength to go on and carry on, regardless of what people think of me. We were brought up very strict Roman Catholics, and we'd have to kneel beside our beds and say, you know, take care of Mummy and Daddy. And I always ended my prayers, please God, let me be a girl in the morning.
Like April, I used to bargain with God. When can I turn into a girl? And then as I got older, I started to realise that magical transformation wasn't going to happen. And I thought that being a very stereotypical man might resolve some of this disappointment I had felt my whole life.
There was a terrible problem of growing up and being terribly feminine and yet having to behave like a boy. So as all my brothers and my father and uncles and everyone had gone to sea, I thought I ought to behave in the same way and be a sailor. I was only 16, and I was extraordinarily feminine. In the evenings, you know, everyone sort of go off and do their own thing. They mostly drank beer and played cards. I would climb into my poop deck and just got incredibly depressed about what I was.
But the wrong environment entirely, but it was a desperate attempt to become a man. Sad, really. You know, she put herself through all this. And all the mental trauma she went through as well.
And I went to a doctor and I told him the problem. I said I wanted to be a woman. And he gave me antidepressants and sleeping pills and I just took the lot.
She was a lost soul and didn't feel she belonged anywhere and thought the best thing is perhaps to erase this soul because every day is a horror.
Biographer and friend Duncan Fallowell looks out of a window.
It was still a criminal offence in those days to try and commit suicide, and I tried to commit suicide. So they stuck me away in a very violent ward where people were tied to beds, and I had male hormones for 1 year. It was, in fact, to make me masculine and to bring out a beard. I had electric treatment. I had truth drugs. You name it, I had it.
I mean, it's a kind of Dr. Mengele world. It's the world of sort of concentration camps and the gulag, which has suddenly strayed into sort of the health service. It's frightening.
That terrible time in the psychiatric unit was the formation of her character. If she would have gone one way or the other, she would have just given in to hopelessness, or she was going to rise above it.
She heard about this famous nightclub, transvestite nightclub in Paris. The Le Carousel nightclub was highly fashionable. It was not part of the underworld. I think when she got to Paris, she met people who loved dressing up as women, who were not frightened of the police, who laughed all the time. The atmosphere was of celebration and carnival and entertainment. I mean, April, 20 years old, what more can you ask for?
A performer in a feathery garment.
She felt she was on the road to the possible resolution of her predicament.
Hashtag April Ashley. Footage is playing on a screen featuring Bombi, star of Le Carousel, performing with short blonde hair. Now in her 80s and with collar-length white hair, she watches the footage of herself. She says Le Carousel was a nightclub in Paris where transvestites impersonated women. In the video, Bombi finishes the performance, dancing in pants and a fringed bra. Now, she says, we were big stars. The newspapers called it a scandal. A projector, Bombi facing the screen, and a photograph of April looking at herself in a mirror. Bombi says, April arrived in Paris during the season of 1956 to 1957. She came to Le Carousel to see if she could be accepted as part of the cast. We became like sisters, and we stayed like sisters for the rest of our lives. It was a happy life without any worries. April was very beautiful and very vivacious. She had a stage presence that made us focus only on her. A black and white photo of April with winged eyeliner, then applying lipstick, then an image of her on stage with her arms in the air and the tassels on her dress fanned out around her. April in a black dress with a pom-pom on the rear, then in a sleeveless floor-length gown. An image of her smiling and wearing big earrings, one of her in a hat with a short flat brim, and a picture of her with a fringe. April in front of a microphone with her mouth open, posing with one hand behind her head and wearing a polka dot head covering. A picture of her and Bombi standing in bikini tops, then April looking straight ahead, her hair dark. Bombi says, the amount of internationally acclaimed film celebrities who attended Le Carousel was incredible. In some footage, a cast member, who's wearing a purple feather headpiece and bustle, dances with other performers in suits. Audience members are seated at tables. Bombi says, Gina Lollobrigida, Sophia Loren and film directors, all of them came to Le Carousel. People said that Elvis Presley visited too. Footage of Bombi with nipple covers on. Now, she says, the stars came backstage and chatted with us. They paid us lots of compliments, but they wanted to look at us closely because they couldn't believe what they were seeing. Footage showing some performers' bare breasts. Boy George, friend.
Being trans and going somewhere where you're embraced, you know, where people don't care, you know, it's almost like a badge of honour to be different.
Footage of cast members smiling in a dressing room, many of them topless. One performer spins while wearing a wide-brimmed hat and a pink dress with puffy sleeves. Juno Dawson, author.
The great thing about meeting other trans people when you're a trans person is they can give you all the tips and tricks, lots of practical guidance. If you want hormones, where you can get hormones. I imagine the conversations with those girls were like, here's the doctor, here's his number, here's his address, here's how to get to Casablanca, and here's what you need to do.
Now, you went to Casablanca for this, yes, this operation. Yes. Why Casablanca?
I learned about Dr. Bure from a friend of mine, and, of course, they weren't doing operations in England at that time. And it was a very lucky choice because, as we now know, Dr. Burrow is the greatest surgeon in that field.
It was at a time when it was an experimental operation, wasn't
it? Yes, Dr. Burrow said, you are a guinea pig, you're only my ninth patient.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine, like, being told, like, you're only the ninth person to have a certain type of surgery, and not just any type of surgery, like having your tonsils out, like having something very invasive that could potentially kill you?
Charlie Craggs, actress.
I'd always promised myself if I couldn't do that operation by the time I was 25, I didn't want to live anyhow. So it wouldn't have mattered if I died or not.
Trans people would rather die or risk dying, having some surgery that only 9 other people have had before, than living the way they are. Like, this is not a choice. Like, this is life or death to us.
A sign says Casablanca.
She said, don't let anyone assume that you undertake such a thing lightly, because it's incredibly difficult and painful, and nobody would ever do that unless they absolutely knew they had to.
Believe you me, the photographs he showed me, if you had any doubt in your mind, that would have flushed it out and you would never have gone through it. I don't think many people can have known that extraordinary happiness the day I woke up.
A photo of April.
I've never known such happiness.
April smiling slightly, wearing a headscarf. Peter Tatchell, friend.
From what April told me, there is no doubt that undergoing gender reassignment surgery was a dream fulfilled. She could become the woman she felt she was.
April came out very glamorized and then thought, right, I've got the confidence, I'm going back to London. I'm going to get a job as a model.
Photos of April in a blazer, an above-the-knee skirt, high heels and a neckerchief. She's standing in front of a door, then a wall, then leaning on a parking meter. Pictures of April wearing a fur coat, then a tiara, followed by a pink head covering. Dame Zandra Rhodes, friend.
I think that April was successful as a model and a personality because people were attracted to her like bees to honey. She had this whole thing about her that was quite wonderful and quite electric.
Being photographed by all these celebrity photographers like David Bailey, Terence Donovan and Lord Snowden put April on the map.
Good. There. That's good. Now stay like that.
This is a beautiful pose by David Bailey, and it looks lovely the way she's posing with her feet. She would have had Bailey shouting at her while she was doing it.
That left elbow, let it go out all of it. No, that's the right.
He likes shouting at you.
Just stand with your legs apart and face me.
April was so much a woman, the epitome of female beauty, that no one questioned her. No one doubted her. The concept or idea that she might be trans never entered anybody's head.
The happiest 6 months of my life was when I was a model. Nobody knew
anything.
Who I was. They didn't know anything. I was accepted by everybody. I had the most wonderful time. Everything that I dreamt of.
There is a certain cachet in beauty. You know, it can get you things and it can open doors for you. Because also, don't forget, not only was she able to sort of pass as a woman, but also she was able to pass as a woman of the upper classes, which is no small feat when you've come from a working class background in Liverpool. You know, kind of that must have been quite the glow up to be able to move in those circles.
Modelling was quite posh in the kind of early 60s.
So, yeah, she sort of took on not just a different gender, but a whole kind of different class as well, you know. You know, her aspiration wasn't just to become a woman, but it was also to be a kind of grand woman, upper-class woman.
I was terribly lucky because I became top model right away. Because I would go to auditions and there would be 200 girls and I would get the job.
April's voice was quite a phenomenon and it was indeed extremely cultured and rather upper class. And I said to her, do the rest of your family speak like this? And she said, I can't remember really. I think they must have done.
Grayson Perry.
There are people, of course, who would be happy, you know, on a council estate. But April, no, she would not have been happy, I don't think, as a housewife, you know, on a council estate in Liverpool. No, I can't see that one. That wasn't part of her vision of herself, I don't think.
My ambition was to get away from Liverpool, to get away from that dreadful sort of sordid life, that I wanted nice things because I did see beautiful homes, I did see beautiful things. And I thought to myself, well, you know, that's the way people should live.
Duncan Fallowell.
And then you think, oh, maybe it is possible. I can become what I always felt I was. And then you can't. Because you've walked slap bang into the real world.
In a reconstruction, April, in a floral housecoat, opens her front door to a horde of journalists and photographers. They crowd around the entrance with their trilby hats and old-fashioned cameras.
April was at the peak of her career when suddenly a friend, or so-called friend, sold the story that she was trans to the Sunday People for a derisory £5.
April closes the front door on the paparazzi and raises her hand to her mouth.
It's going to come out anyway. And you can't blackmail reality beyond a certain point. Reality is that which cannot be manipulated. And when it hits you, you have to deal with it. And it hit April hard.
Jake Graff, transgender filmmaker.
She wasn't trying to be deceptive. She wasn't trying to live a lie or to lead anyone astray or lead anyone on. She was just living as the woman that she'd always known herself to be and making the most of every minute because, you know, I can attest, having lived as a stealth trans man for several years, that it does feel like a ticking time bomb in the background and you're worried the whole time about being discovered and what might happen if you are discovered and whether or not it will all come crashing down.
April sits on her stairs.
I suppose in the end it did do her a favour because I'm not sure that she could have carried on. It would have been a constant game of cat and mouse. She would have been more and more anxious about somebody finding out.
As someone who was outed on the front page of a newspaper myself, I can have some idea of what April must have felt like when that happened to her. It's an extremely exposing position to be in, knowing that the public, society, all of a sudden knows something very intimate and very private about you. It must have been absolutely horrific.
If April's life couldn't take any more twists and turns at this point, she then meets Arthur Corbett, who is the son of Lord Rylan, who is aristocratic, wealth, the total opposite of the life she had growing up. When
I fall in love. April and Arthur sit in a dimly lit room drinking wine. He takes her hand and she smiles, her large diamante earrings glittering in the half-light. A black-and-white photo of them sitting in a bar.
He left his wife, which I felt very responsible about, and his four children, and we went off to Spain and opened a nightclub.
More photos.
He proposed to me every day for 3 years, and in the end I weakened and married him, which was very foolish of me.
Why was it foolish?
Oh, because I didn't love him, you see.
A newspaper headline, Piers' son to wed sex change April. Then photos of the wedding, with April in a pale coat and wide-brimmed hat.
She said to me that she didn't want to marry him, and he sort of bullied her into it. And I suppose April thought, oh, he's going to be Lord Rylan one day, maybe it would be quite fun to be Ro Rylan, we'll sort it out along the way. And then it all went pear-shaped, didn't work out at all. It just turned into a load of gravel, really. It just sounded to me really like a can of worms where nobody was going to end up with what they really wanted.
A ring on a table.
But often, well, people dream, don't they?
In 1967, Arthur Corbett filed a petition for an annulment of the marriage. On the basis, it was null and void because April Ashley was a person of the male sex. A judge straightens his wig.
This case appears to be the first occasion on which a court in England has been called on to decide the sex of an individual.
It's really adding insult to injury, the fact that, like, he didn't just want to get a divorce or, like, break up or whatever. It was like, I want an annulment because you're a man. It's like, and I, as a trans person, I know that I've been treated like, never been annulled. I've never been married to have been annulled. But I've, like, had people turn around, like, after you don't give them what they want and be like, you're just a man. And it's like, oh, well, I'm not going to say what I did after that, but it's so, so low to do that to a trans person. Like, it just shows you the nature of his character.
In 1970, Lord Justice Ormerod delivered his verdict. The following dialogue is taken from his summing up. The language reflects the attitudes and prejudices of the time.
April Ashley claims to be a woman. she admits she was born a male, but had undergone a so-called sex change operation for the construction of an artificial vagina. But can this operation affect true biological sex? My judgment in this case will depend on whether April Ashley is or is not a woman.
In court,
Arthur Corbett is seeking an annulment of his so-called marriage to April Ashley on the basis that she is not a woman. Medical experts will conduct examinations to determine the true sex of April Ashley.
Ormerod appointed two independent medical experts, both of them very, very senior gynecologists, to examine April and to report on her external anatomy.
Zoe Playden.
The first report said that April's vagina was the same as anyone else's vagina. That didn't satisfy Ormerod. He told the two independent experts to look again. And 6 weeks later, they sent in another report in which they then referred to April's artificial vagina, deliberately setting out to disauthenticate her body.
On the morning of the actual verdict, she became aware that Ormerod was turning against her.
Friend Tony Singleton.
This very successful, exquisitely beautiful woman was turned into some sort of aberration of nature, a pastiche of femininity, redolent of a talented female impersonator.
We were aware that she was becoming more distressed. She certainly was much, much quieter.
She arrives at the courthouse.
All of the evidence that was heard against April was set on discrediting her as perverted, playing some kind of prank on respectable society. Not a real woman.
I must say, we got absolutely more and more horrified. Nightmare. Absolute nightmare. What April must have been going through, heavens alone knows, because you could hear the negativity happening. But one sat there sort of, I must say, in a bit of trepidation, sort of thinking, what is going to happen?
The contributors listened to the words.
And now to my judgment in this case. Marriage is a relationship which depends on sex and not on gender. It is, and always has been, recognized as a union of man and woman. It is the institution on which the family is built, and in which the capacity for natural heterosexual intercourse is an essential element. This can only be met by two persons of opposite sex.
Wow.
My judgment is that the biological sex of an individual is fixed at birth and cannot be changed by medical or surgical means. My conclusion, therefore, is that it has been established that April Ashley is not and was not a woman for the purposes of marriage, but was at all times a biological male. The marriage is accordingly void.
It's just heartless. No empathy, nothing. He was probably a hanging judge, you know. Sounds it. He's what my mother would call an old nit. Everything that she'd worked so hard for, dismissed in a few paragraphs by a very, very bigoted, ignorant man.
I can't remember how it was phrased, but in other words, you're not a woman.
He shrugs, looking emotional. A photo of an immaculately made-up April in an elegant black coat and fur hat.
What's so amazing about April? And the thing I really love, she's so strong and can bounce back so quickly. And nothing will get her down outwardly. However disastrously things have gone awry, she'll find a way of dealing with it and not show whatever the chaos is going on inside. And certainly within the next few days, she was April again.
And then, in true April fashion, she takes herself off somewhere else, this time to Oxford, and she was schmoozing with the undergrads and all this, like, eligible, like, young toy boys for her, and just being April. She was just living her best life. Again, she was not broken.
Oxford at the end of the 60s was fantastic. And April joined us for that. We both detected in each other a rather naughty love of life. She was shy. That always helps, to be shy, I find. It's very sexy to be shy. And we became great friends, and more than great friends for a little while. I remember we came back from a party and I crashed out with her. We were both very far gone. And she lay on her back and said to the ceiling, "Fuck me, fuck me, fuck me." I'm going to write about this in great detail in my memoir. But I'll always love her for what she did to my youth. And my friends adored her too, and we just accepted her. It was the era of free love. Acid, LSD, psychedelia. Spending money you didn't really have, but so what? You know, you could run up bills in those days. The great savior for the disappointment of losing the case was the restaurant 88.
She opened a restaurant called 88, which was April and Desmond, who was a very close friend of hers for years. There was a huge amount of drinking going on.
Champagne was a big, strong theme in her life.
Photos, then champagne.
I'd been in the Navy, so I was extremely skilled at drinking huge amounts. April could even top me.
A black and white photo, then a tower of champagne glasses.
You can't do it. You can't. You simply can't hold the rudder steady and swallow all that booze. You just can't do it.
The champagne glass falls and shatters. Grayson Perry puts on an inflatable crown and smiles.
I went to a party in 1983, beginning of 1983, and lo and behold, there was April Ashley in all of her glory, you know. And I was like, oh, here was this person that kind of symbolised living the life, you know. So, yeah, I got chained to her. Yeah, I mean, I was attracted to her because she was high maintenance. You know, that's what you want. You want a woman that is sort of constructed. Well, we went on a couple of dates, you know, which were very drunken and fun, and she had a lot of stories to tell.
She told many extremely risque stories about her various encounters with various men. Her favourite one was always about Omar Sharif and Peter O'Toole simultaneously. This was the really exciting bit. As well it might have been, I mean, goodness me. Who wouldn't be excited?
You know, I used to sleep with Peter, but we never made love, but I did with Omar Sharif.
Did Mr...
But he didn't know anything about me, by the way.
He didn't?
No.
Did he... I don't know how to put this. I mean... would he have got a shock?
I mean, I remember her getting up and she would get up before me and she would be, you know, arrive fully coiffed, made up. Kind of seductive, kind of bit vampy. Sort of like, ooh, you know... Darling. I mean, this is a long time ago. I can just remember there was a lot of alcohol involved, you know, lunchtime drinking, evening drinking. I was under no illusion that this was going to be a long-term relationship, put it like that.
yeah.
He opens his eyes wide. Then, a glass of wine.
April has a health crisis of some sort brought on by drink. And she sort of recovered, dried out a bit. And when she actually came to live around here in Hay-on-Wye, you know, you would think in a remote country town there would be problems, but there weren't really. People of Hay and the borders took to April quite naturally.
After 20 sometimes glamorous years as a woman, April now lives alone in Hay-on-Wye. Her isolation broken only by visits from people like Philip, the son of her best friend. The locals are used to her now and accept her for what she is, with one or two small exceptions.
One little boy says, "Hello, Miss Ashley." And I said, "Oh, hello." And I was so touched, all the tears were streaming down my face, and I got two steps further on. One said to the other, "She's a lesbian, you know."
In a pub.
Morning, April.
Morning, Chris.
What would you like?
Half a bitter and a Coca-Cola, please.
She was drinking with a local chap. He was asking, "What's it like down there?" She said to him, "Well, everybody knows handmade is better than mass-produced." And, of course, this just gives a... This is April's lovely, gritty Liverpudlian side, that she could come up with a really brilliant line like that, you know.
She sits with Philip.
Cheers.
Then another extraordinary transformation takes place. Blow me down. This weird, strange creature of the night becomes a national treasure.
Hashtag April Ashley. Boy George.
The first time I met April was, I think, at her flat in Earls Court. And me and Marilyn at that time, it was like just before Culture Club, so it was quite punk, but like with a sort of hint of drag. And Marilyn was, you know, drop dead gorgeous doing Marilyn Monroe.
Climbing candlelit stairs, then pouring champagne.
So I remember when we met April, I don't think I was famous, but I'd got a record deal, so I was known. April said to me, "Have you made any money or have you inherited it?" I don't know why she even said it, because I had no money at the time, but it was just, you know, just talk. Some altercation started, it was really over nothing. And we were asked to leave. And we were like, "Oh my God, how embarrassing, we've been thrown out of this party." And that was it. You know, I never saw April again until 30 odd years later.
Simon Callow.
I happened to have met Jeremy Hunt. He was the culture secretary. And I wrote him and I said, "Jeremy, you know, wouldn't it be a wonderful thing if this country made a gesture towards transgendered people and to honour this extraordinary woman?" So it turned out that she went down to Buckingham Palace to receive that honour, and that day was a blazing, blazing moment.
He was awfully nice. He's better looking in real life, and he was very sweet. And as I walked up to him, he said to me, "April, this has been a long time coming, hasn't it?"
I'm not proud of so very many things in my life, but that is one I'm very pleased about. It's moving to me now to think back to that day. She was in a state of great and high emotion, and her eyes did fill with tears, and she was not a woman who cried easily at all.
Even, you can't call, I suppose you get the MB, you've joined the establishment, have you not? What an extraordinary trajectory that is. Only April could have done that.
So 30 years later, maybe longer, I got asked to be involved in an art exhibition they were doing on April. I take photographs, and I said, "Oh, I'd love to photograph April, that'd be amazing." I was invited to lunch with her, but she was quite forward. She said, "Oh, wasn't you, didn't we have an altercation or something in 1981 or something like that?" And I was like, "Yeah," I said, "I don't know if it was as bad as you thought it was." I personally was a massive admirer. I was very complimentary, and I think it knocked her off her heels. Once she'd made the decision to do it, we set a date, she turned up at my house. I asked her what she wanted, she said champagne. No cheap shit. So I got a beautiful champagne and, you know, and I feel like that picture that I took was like closing a circle. People notice it. When they see it, they're always like, oh, who's that? You know, they're fascinated. Is it one of the royals? And say no. Kind of. Sweetie, I'm really proud of this picture. Very beautiful. It's like defiant, bold. So much experience in that face.
You know, when you go through life and you meet Einstein, you meet Sir Winston Churchill, you get Dali wants to paint you. Picasso looks you over three or four times. You know, to know all these people was extraordinary. And why I met them, I will never know.
Loose Women.
What advice would you have for anybody out there who may be feeling that, you know, they're trapped in the wrong body? What advice would you give somebody now?
Well, I write to people all the time. I think that's why I got an MBE from Her Majesty the Queen. But I would be very kind, both to yourself and to other people. Be beautiful inside, and that makes you beautiful outside.
Lovely.
And be bloody brave.
Sitting on the panel along with the presenters, she smiles and claps. A view over the London city skyline. Tony Singleton.
It's the last few years. She wasn't getting out as much, and I would totter gently down, carrying a light lunch and a bottle of wine, get on the bus and totter down to the flat. But of course, when I arrived, she invariably had a bottle of champagne standing by, which made my return journey at about 5 o'clock slightly risky. And then I was just getting into bed, and I've got a large television at the bottom of my bed, and I was just sitting getting ready. And this picture of April came up, announcing that she had died. And the famous photograph of the big fur hat came up. And I thought, oh my God, even before they said it.
Colour archive film of April in her fur hat. She smiles and turns to smell a bunch of red flowers in her hand. She turns back to the cameras. Paul O'Grady.
Listen, I'd just like to say thank you for asking me to speak about her, because she was somebody I always admired. And when I eventually got to meet her properly, I just thought she was just wonderful. She really is. She really was. She was a great lady. That's what I'd like to see on her headstone. A great lady.
Her life had been, well, an odyssey, an almost inconceivable story of astounding bravery and courage, and a life absolutely packed with incident and with challenge.
The Gender Recognition Act of 2004 was a groundbreaking piece of legislation that has changed the lives of trans people in the United Kingdom. And I believe it was because of April's marriage that there was a recognition that what do we do with these people? What legally do we do with these people who have changed their gender and or sexual characteristics? It's a shame that she had to experience that trauma so that people like me, 50 years later, could get married.
I feel very lucky that I was many, many years later able to marry my wife, and obviously we were both transgender. The fact that we were able to marry, the fact that we were able to have a child by surrogacy is nothing short of incredible.
Let's have another kiss.
I see a lot of similarities between myself and April. I was in the army, she was in the merchant navy, she was out of the newspaper, I was out of the newspaper. She wanted life and love, and I want life and love. The difference is that all those things were denied to April, whereas those things I'm allowed to have, and that is honestly because of April.
This was the first time a trans person was really dragged over the coals this debate is still happening now, this sense of, are trans women real women? You know, you could read that on one of today's headlines. I can almost guarantee, turn to your paper and there will be the same story 60, 70 years later about trying to establish what is a real woman.
Her legacy very much fits in with what is happening today. All this modern trans business. April's a trans pioneer. She's a trans... No, she's not. She's not a trans woman. What she really believed and wanted to become was a woman. End of. I mean, it's simple.
April starts a petrol mower.
I don't think I could have had a better life. I think I've had a marvellous life to come out of the back streets of Liverpool, marry a peer of the realm, have wonderful friends, have quite a few wonderful lovers. What more can you ask for?
In knee-high heeled leather boots, she cuts the grass in her garden, watched by her dog.